Welcome, everyone. This is, I believe, Podcast of the K. How many years now? I don't know actually what our podcast is called anymore. I have no clue. My name is James McLean. I am Atlantic side to the west, to the Atlantic side. No, I'm to the east, to the Atlantic side to the west, which is Brian Terranova.
That's this guy again. Whoa, déjà vu.
Déjà vu. Almost like... Almost like we screwed up the last attempt of doing this, and we're doing it again.
It wouldn't be a podcast with you and I if we didn't.
No, absolutely. It's a wonderful. It's really good to hear from Brian. I've not spoken to Brian in months, it was basically, well, the reason I spoke to Brian is because of this idea for this podcast, and I'll briefly explain it to you again. To all the inanimate objects in this room that I'm sitting in, they'll have already heard this. And I apologize to all of you, especially my little Christmas tree plant, who is not in that, well, is inanimate to some degrees, but is biological and possibly does understand what I'm talking about, to its despair. The idea here was that we could go back and look at Rose. And by looking at Rose, we'd be looking at it as the beginning of a series, which is fine, because that's what Rose was back in 2005. But we'd be looking at it as the as a follow-on from a series which culminated with Day of the Doctor. So Day of the Doctor is the big finale to maybe several seasons worth of the time of the War Doctor, which isn't inconceivable, as Brian has not told you, but would have if the recording had worked. The War Doctor obviously has his big finish series as well. So it's not too hard to imagine a series of the War Doctor that eventually culminates in the big finale of the Time War and its resolution, which ends with it being his final story.
So, and it should be stated that's Big Finish's vision, you know, and we're coming off the heels of Moffat's Day of the Doctor into Russell's new era. But you know, you mentioned before in our kind of false start, we'll say there, that it would have been interesting to see Russell's version of the Time War before we get to Eccleston's first official season. But it dawned on me, what if it wasn't even Russell? Like, we're getting, there's Big Finish's version, there's Moffat's version, but what if there was somebody completely different in charge of this? And now you have me very interested to see what a War Doctor series would have been, because obviously it would have been, you know, probably what, year 2000?
Yeah.
Right? Who would have done that? I'm now like my gears are really digging into this alternate reality that we're playing in here.
I mean, yeah, and you could even look at the sort of various shows around 2000 which were still running in terms of sci-fi. Think of things like Farscape and Lex.
Oh, yeah.
You know, would there have been a certain sort of vibe, tone to it that would have resonated with that sort of type of sci-fi genre which was coming out at that time? I think also, which is probably... what I like about your idea as well is that if we imagine that the Time War was quite a dark, complex idea and storyline, especially if we're looking at Big Finish, going to Russell T. Davis as the new producer, as the new showrunner, is a really interesting response to what the Time War is all about, which is the Time War is it's war, it's a dark subject. So to be coming off that and you get this... you get this producer who is a very sort of vibrant, sort of very sort of human writer. You know, he's a very character-driven writer. I wonder what that would have said at the time, from coming from the Time War, to say, you know, the next series is because Sharon's going to be Russell T. Davis, and you know, it's going to be very sort of character-driven. It's perhaps going to be less about massive arcs and apocalypses and God knows what else you'd have in a Time War. I must admit, I've not listened to the Big Finish War Doctor one, so I'm not even sure where they go, but I imagine they go into far more weirder directions than Day of the Doctor did. But I think that's really interesting as well, is to imagine Russell T. Davis as the brand new showrunner following on from, you know, and also you've got John Hurt as well. So it gives you the idea of the sort of tone and the sort of caliber of actor that you've got running there. Now, I'm not saying Christopher Eccleston's not got a caliber to him, he has indeed.
No.
But the way he'll be playing him and what he's doing is going to be very different to what the War Doctor was doing.
And what's really interesting too is that, you know, some of the, you know, to put us back in the real world for a second, there we are, some of the criticisms that Day of the Doctor took about the Time War was that it just seemed like a war.
Yeah.
You know, just it was like fighting any other war that we'd ever seen. After, you know, we talk about some of the things that are to come in Russell's era, where he kind of made the Time War out to be something that we just couldn't comprehend with some of the ways that he would describe the things in it. And it makes it now even more interesting to picture what 4 years or 5 years worth of a Time War series that would have been very sci-fi thematically heavy to try and get across how crazy a Time War could actually be.
Yeah.
But then that kind of, and I'll say this, and I probably don't mean it as rudely, but that dumbing down that Day of the Doctor did with the Time War really makes sense. And it was what Moffat was going for, trying to show that, like, the war had gone on so far. You know, it's kind of like Genesis of the Daleks,
yeah,
where, like, you know, they're now using the scraps. They're fighting with whatever they have left, which is just basic war, basic weapons kind of thing that we're used to. But it now makes it seem more like, okay, you guys have just watched 4 or 5 years of this epic, weird, odd Time War, things that maybe, you know, would make sense. You know, I'm trying to think of a sci-fi writer that would make sense for, but one's not springing to mind. But, you know, it would be madness. Let's bring things tonally back to something, you know. They bring us to Earth. They bring war to something comprehensible. And then it's easing us back into this new guy who's taking over the show, who's going to bring things down to a more family kind of individual based dramatic show.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting way of looking at how would the press releases, how would the junkets, how they positioned this show in relation to, as you say, this very conceptual, high concept, you know, all these big sort of time spacey things, which, as you say, by almost, you could almost say that Day of the Doctor could have been almost like considered a bridge between where the show was expected to go next season, which would probably be back to Earth, more grounded. And so the final for this Time War is very much centered around Earth for that reason. Maybe Earth hadn't been seen for quite some time in the last series because it's, you know, tangential to what's going on these various time planes, which perhaps in the last season focused down onto Gallifrey. And became very much about Gallifrey because that was all, as you say, was left, was this fight for Gallifrey.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to do this as a commentary. Well, no, we're not. We're going to have it running in the background as you would as a commentary, but we're not really using, as we've done previously, we're not really using it as the thing that we're focusing on, but just something to jump, to bounce off. So we will sync you in. So we will give you a 3-2-1, and you can sync yourself in if you like. If that's what you'd really like, if that's what you'd really want. And we will start talking about Rose from its beginning. So it's going to be about 40 minutes. Brian, are you ready? We feel like we've gone way into this already. Before you even
yes,
started.
We've gone down the rabbit hole a little bit far now. All we can do is go further.
Okay. So 3, 2, 1. And start. Mine hasn't started. It's still stopped. It's decided it's not going to do anything. That's fine. It's just not live or anything, but it's just going to make it awkward to edit. Right. So we're into the opening sequence, which, again, like I said, the opening sequence for Russell T. Davies very much speaks to how he wanted his show to be, as any opening sequence does. It speaks to the tone of the show that you're about to do. So how do you feel about this? Because, I mean, you've listened to the Big Finish ones, which has its own sort of... Is the theme specific to that, or is it...
The theme is a bit more epic. I will say, this is a great theme. The Russell T. Davies theme is a great theme. But I really have to say Big Finish kind of... they have this Time War theme that is now shared with Paul McGann and John Hurt, since obviously we lost John Hurt. They kind of gave it to Paul McGann when they did his Time War stories. But it's a pretty epic version of the theme song, and I really like it a lot. This one kind of almost has a little, even though Murray Gold used more real instruments, it kind of has more of that old classic kind of synthetic feel to it. So I don't know, it's almost, in a sense, it would almost be like returning back home if you were truly watching from the Time War into this. That's kind of a weird thought aspect. What I'm going to try and do is kind of try and remove myself from the Big Finish version, which I will say is quite good, and they do a good job of making the stories sound a little bit like the weaponry that's used and so on, make it sci-fi, but it's not quite as out there in concept as even Russell made, but it's still not as plain Jane as Moff made it sound in Day of the Doctor.
Absolutely. So, I mean, if we consider it from Day of the Doctor specifically, and I think here one of the fascinating things that I found when I started watching this is this idea of the bad wolf, the moment, manifestation that Billy Piper plays. And then we go into this brand new series, which, as you say, takes us straight to Earth, well away from Gallifrey and Time Wars, and opens up with an interesting segue in this meta-commentary of the same actress playing the Rose character, which is kind of alluded to in the final episode. And one of the things I think we need to say is that when you're thinking about Day of the Doctor, you've got to think of it as a John Hurt War Doctor episode, with the guest stars being David Tennant and Matt Smith, which in itself becomes crazy, because you've obviously got two Doctors there that haven't appeared yet.
It's the polar opposite of what it is, right? The Day of the Doctor introduced John Hurt as this doctor we've never known. But now if we're looking at it from the perspective of John Hurt had a series, Matt Smith and David Tennant are two doctors we shouldn't know.
Oh, Brian, I think we're going to eventually have to go back and do Day of the Doctor on this as well, aren't we? Because I think that this opens up so many cans of worms.
Right. It's interesting, too, because it makes you sit there and think, you know, like will we ever see these doctors?
Exactly.
Are they specific to this one story? Like, oh, that's so bizarre.
Are they just there to indicate that things get happier for this character, this dark, gloomy doctor we've been following for all these years, that his future is actually going to be totally the opposite? Is this like a role reversal where normally it's the craggy, older version of you that comes back to warn you of the things you're going to do? It's the other way around.
If they didn't announce Christopher Eccleston being the Doctor, if you were going into this new episode and they were able to keep a secret, we would probably be sitting here going, wait a minute, one of those guys, wasn't that guy in the suit and the glasses, wasn't he the younger one? Are we going to be seeing him now? Is that what's happening? Like, that would be crazy. Like, you would have to be sitting here thinking one of them are the Doctor. Why would you hire these two people if they're not going to be the next guy?
So let's leave that, because we might pick up on that in another podcast, because I think the Doctor might need to be done. But here, looking at Rose, I mean, obviously we're still following Rose. We've got this very urban, we've got this callback to Spearhead from Space, which again, I could almost imagine fans finding a quite interesting comparison towards the sort of high end, you know, the futuristic war games. And the end of that going into the Autons for Spearhead from Space. And we'd have almost like a similar thing happening here. Familiar enemy, very sort of urban Earth world, so it strikes a difference in tone and scale to what could have been like four seasons of Daleks in various ways. May have been seasons where the Daleks weren't there. Might have been, I don't know, Ogrons, Time Ogrons, Togrons.
Yeah,
I don't know, but you know, suddenly we're going to something which is very small and very character specific, and this opening is very, very much character driven, isn't it? We have this, you know, very fast montage of Rose and her life, which again, if you're thinking about, you'd be looking at Rose as Bad Wolf rather than as Rose. That would seem quite interesting, to suddenly see this character suddenly being that you perceive, seen in Day of the Doctor, suddenly being made into a human. And this sequence would almost be like trying to tell you, this isn't the same person. This is not the Bad Wolf moment. This is actually a living human being. Again, as we said, it's almost a bit like the Astra Romana or these things where we sort of have these actors play something one time and they play something very different to the next season.
And, you know, it's very interesting, too, because this episode very much focuses on Rose's side of the story, and the Doctor is almost a character in Rose's episode here, if you want to think of it that way. And that would make sense, having introduced her in Day of the Doctor as this kind of mysterious and confident and helpful character to this new person who is perhaps not so confident, not so sure, or at least lost right now in this new world that she's entering in. It's almost like it was designed specifically for us to watch this character change, to see her become this person that she will become.
But I think there's something really interesting, because we've just had the Doctor introduced, And obviously we don't know it's the Doctor, but if you were coming from the previous episode, the leather jacket certainly would give you a clue. You'd have
a new
Sonic.
You would also have his face.
You'd have just seen a slight regeneration, so you'd have had a little bit of that. But I think it's also, again, interesting that we sort of, you know, the leather jacket, I mean, obviously the outfit isn't exactly the same, the jacket's not exactly the same either.
But it's familiar.
Yes, there's that sort of familiarity.
What did that poster just say? Oh, attract. Is it say? I thought that said attraxy. Not to get too far ahead of our newer Who here in comparison to where we're going on from Day of the Doctor. But there you go.
I would also think what would be interesting is the dynamic element of this Doctor as well compared to your previous Doctor.
Yes.
Because that opening scene is very, very energetic, very pushing.
But I wonder if him having a bomb would be so out of character for what we would have seen in the Time War series. Because I remember here it was a little bit like, it's not that odd that he would blow things up, but to him to truly just carry it around like that was a little bit jarring, if I'm not mistaken. Although this upcoming scene that we're going to hit, obviously we got to talk about that, not this, which is great in itself. That holds up pretty well.
Yeah, I don't think it's too bad.
But this right here, boom, walking past the TARDIS. If you weren't sure that man in the leather jacket was the Doctor, you've got it now. We know what's going on, kind of thing.
Clean
you know, and that's another great little aspect.
Absolutely. I mean, I find the Doctor, imagining this being the follow-on Doctor, really interesting. And also, like, you got the impression that the War Doctor, aside from Clara, was spending a lot of time just focused on Gallifreyans and Daleks, maybe in that last season. And so suddenly we see a Doctor who, at the end of Day of the Doctor, was kind of coming to terms with who he was, that he was the Doctor again. And so suddenly this is our first sight of him being the Doctor again. So maybe, again, there's an interesting audience catharsis in suddenly seeing this, the character who we've probably seen as being so dark and so burdened through the Time War, become something a little more sort of like that of old, that sort of more excited Doctor, that more engaged.
It is a little bit interesting that you've got him being excited, considering Day of the Doctor showed us that, you know, he was kind of at the end. He was ready to use whatever desperate measures there were, so much so that even meeting his future selves kind of just told him, look, I do have to go do this thing. And he was prepared to go ahead and end the war through one of the worst ways possible. And even though in the end, we know for sure because of Day of the Doctor that he didn't truly do what he thinks he did. That's he still true, thinks yes. he did it. So he that have him coming into this episode being so lively, you have to wonder, like, what's going on? Has time passed? Is this just for show? Like, obviously this is, we only met him for a few seconds, but so it's very jarring.
So this is something we'd have to sort of almost at this point be trying to reconcile, probably on Outpost Gallifrey or wherever at the time. Is you're right. I mean, that was a mistangent on my part. Yes, he would not remember that. But do you sort of have a sort of feeling that if you were following on from that, you would want to feel that the end of that finale, that something in that finale had meaning, that it wasn't just simply him forgetting everything and then carrying on, because that be kind of negates. I mean, okay, you would know personally that Gallifrey was saved and wasn't destroyed.
Yeah.
But you'd want to feel that as a character that something had, there was something more there.
Well,
and maybe
there would
be something in undercurrent.
No. I was going to say I would kind of feel that's why they have the future Doctors in there, but not the next to come, right? Because they're giving you the audience at the end of the War Doctor's season, which you have to picture. If he's in a Time War with the Daleks, there has to be a lot of loss, right? Yeah. So getting the future Doctors in there, that hope, they know, hey, this is great. We've struggled with this for a long time. You're doing two things there. You're giving the Doctor both that weight off his shoulders, but you're giving the audience the feeling that, you know, the weight's off his shoulders, but you haven't quite seen the weight that he had to deal with yet, because that's what's coming in this new dramatic series. And then you understand why you've got Russell T. Davis as that new showrunner.
That's interesting. So it's almost like you could almost read it like there's a sort of like an emotional release, as if maybe subconsciously there's a sort of change in him from what happened in Day of the Doctor, but intellectually, because he doesn't remember it, the memory of what he thinks has happened is still very much there, which you could, again, this is all hypothetical, but you could see that as an interpretation of what Chris Eccleston's Doctor is doing. He is a kind of a mixture of someone who is sort of still deeply burdened by what's happened and being alone, and yet at the same time, is there something lighter there than the War Doctor? Is it, or, yes, you could say that's just a different personality of the Doctor. I kind of
You
like the
know what?
idea that that has been some, there is a little bit of something under there which has helped him sort of regenerate into something which is a little more released from the burden, even though intellectually he isn't, because he doesn't know that.
So two things there. On a subconscious level, he's very much aware that what he did was not end his race. But his conscious memory isn't aware of that, so he's able to both he's both carrying the burden of what he did and both having that relief a little bit eased by allowing him to enjoy little moments in life now, because part of him knows it, but he's not aware, and that's interesting. But what you also have from a showrunner perspective is, imagine in this scenario that whoever wrote Day of the Doctor wasn't Stephen Moffat, obviously, because he's yet to come. You usually, what we have seen in the past anyway, is that the showrunner coming in is kind of like, hey, can you make sure that you don't do this in your final episode, because I'm going to be doing something like this, and they kind of work together. So it kind of makes sense that maybe they were going to go out with like a big kind of happy ending for the War Doctor, and then they were asked by Russell, hey, I can't have it be a happy ending because I need to deal with a doctor with post-traumatic stress disorder, and that would make a lot of sense, because it would also kind of it just works rather well, because you're gonna give us that happy moment, which makes perfect sense. But if you're bleeding into the series, that happy moment doesn't make sense unless you need it to not make sense, if that logic right there just made sense out of my mouth.
Well, I mean, if you're going to have him in a point where he intellectually does not remember, then you need to find a way of making it that he doesn't just want to sort of Luke Skywalker himself on an island somewhere, because that's a massive burden, knowing that you have murdered your entire race, including all the children. And we do see there are children in Day of the Doctor. So that is something big, which, unless, I kind of feel that a regeneration. He would need more than just Christopher Eccleston to be able to deal with that baggage than what we see here, unless there's a part of him underneath there which perhaps does know that things aren't as bad as they are, that somehow that things aren't, I don't know, it kind of feel, or maybe, because sometimes we obviously see the Doctor in his mind split into different personalities. Maybe there is a War Doctor in there which does know the truth and is sort of keeping him from going insane. Or maybe that's part of the so I kind of like the idea that the Eccleston character, as you say, is a post-traumatic, almost like a fractured character, which is half aware that he is not the monster that he thinks he is, but intellectually believes he is the monster that he isn't. And that's a really weird combo, and that kind of speaks to the sort of fractured nature of the character, who is sometimes you feel he's putting a face on, and he's being a bit clownish for her. But there are sometimes when he's by himself and he's still a bit clownish anyway. So,
So maybe there's that part that's trying to peek out.
yeah, so maybe there's something going on there, which again, maybe on Outpost Gallifrey you'd be talking about.
Which, by the way, we should be talking about this scene right here. I know we're not trying to do commentary, but you've got Rose and the doctor walking here, and now they're a little bit more on a friendly level. But a moment ago, it was almost the reverse of Day of the Doctor. You had, Bad Wolf being the confident one, trying to get the War Doctor to understand kind of the true picture that's really happening, and then here you have the doctor being the confident one with Rose trying to figure out what's going on. It really does seem like those two scenes were purposefully written to go back to back the way that we're watching it right now.
Yes, it's a beautiful role reversal.
Yeah,
And it's
that's
funny
a
when you
beautiful
think,
shot right there.
yeah.
The close up on Rose, that just looked really good, even for I know cinematography has moved on a lot, but that was a really great shot. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say this, there is a sort of beautiful thing. You think that this would, in theory, depending on whether there was a gap between the two, like almost like back to back, and suddenly the role reversals have shifted, and it almost makes that seem so poetic and almost intended, even though it obviously is impossible. Yeah, I think something we did miss as well, which would have been again another point of would have been him looking in the mirror and mentioning ears, which again, if you were following from Day of the Doctor, would really cement this as being pretty much straight after, even though obviously there's conversations about that since, and obviously whether that was just a mess up on Russell's part, mixing that with the sort of photo material and historical material, which is later shown in the episode, suggesting that he's been around for a while.
It is interesting too that, you know, like in a moment, Rose is going to go kind of on her research jaunt to try and figure out who's this doctor, but there's not going to be any evidence of the War Doctor, which does lend more weight, you know. Here, in this scenario, it would actually back up what we've already seen, but it really does lend weight that the War Doctor didn't really kind of end up back on present day Earth, or Earth really during the Time War.
It depends on how you want to look at it. I mean, I mean, there's arguments that he could have had amnesia when he had a couple of adventures. There's certainly arguments that, and a lot of people have suggested that there could have been adventures specifically between Rose, End of the World, where he disappears for a moment, then comes back.
Oh yeah.
Maybe
time
they were...
could have been rewritten.
Absolutely, there's loads.
But I meant the War Doctor. Like when she does her searches, she comes across Eccleston.
Oh, I see.
But she doesn't see John Hurt anywhere, which would either suggest to me that any adventure that he had during the Time War that may have been Earth-based was either erased, or since he wasn't calling himself the Doctor, why would he come up in these searches? Or Earth just was not on the radar, because maybe it was somehow kept out of the Time War and protected.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really interesting how this episode, when I rewatched it recently, it works. I was thinking how very good it is, as we've said this before in previous podcasts, how very good it is at sort of storytelling the world of Doctor Who, very carefully, very slowly. I'm not assuming anything so new people can get into it. But at the same time, it does kind of really work as a follow-on. Its tone, its shift in tone feels perfect against Day of the Doctor. It feels the opposite. This new set of characters that we're seeing, and this new feeling of normal people, you know, we're back to real life rather than these existential threats of various monstrosities in the Time War. And we're back to a sort of normal, you know, everyday England. And this person who was the personification of the end of the fight of the Time War is now searching out the Doctor, and this kind of feeling like, you know, maybe the moment, you know, was the moment Bad Wolf was a real prelude to a character to come. And again, we could imagine, like you said, how does that work within a production's point of view? Would that have been something that would have been agreed? Would have that been something which Russell T. Davis bounced off? And well, I really like Billy Piper in that role. I want him as a companion, so almost like a Catherine Tate thing, you know, great in Runaway Bride. She possibly wouldn't ever do a series. Oh, she would.
Well, and also think about the repeated meme of this season. It's going to have a lot more weight now, because we were first introduced to this character as Bad Wolf, but now we're seeing her as this girl named Rose.
Yeah.
And then throughout the episodes, we're going to be seeing or hearing Bad Wolf.
Yes.
You know, that's going to be more impactful even now, because now it's going to have this deeper meaning than something. It's not a puzzle to figure out as like a complete kind of blank slate. Now it's a puzzle to figure out, like, oh my gosh, how is this relating to what we already know?
Yeah.
How is this building up? And you get the true payoff. You get to essentially see the figure that she becomes in the 50th by the end of this series.
Well, I mean, something I was thinking about, again, we might do more of these, so who knows, but certainly in Parting of the Ways, where Rose becomes the TARDIS and almost becomes almost like a variant of, you know, becomes a time agent in itself. And it's like, is there a link there to the Bad Wolf? You know, maybe the Bad Wolf picks her through that. Well, I think it's suggested to some degree that her resonation through Bad Wolf in the moment of Parting of the Ways. So, but then if we're looking at it as a role reversal, like you say, where we start off with Bad Wolf and we see at the end how Rose becomes a thing which therefore the moment capitalizes on in trying to find a way of talking to John Hurt. It's a very interesting way round, and it's quite a nice, it makes this season very much an epilogue to the Time War in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously the Daleks carry on after this, but in terms of what the Time War is, it feels like this is the epilogue, which then allows David Tennant to kick off with Rose with all this behind. Bad Wolf is put behind, you know, the PTSD to some degree is put behind, not perfectly, but is put behind. And we move on into a different direction, because this season always feels very much self-contained, largely because obviously it's only got Christopher Eccleston, but in its tone, in its, as I say, it's got a lot of threads running through it as it kind of explores the world and story tells the world to a new audience. And I also like that idea. I always like the idea of it being a political thing here. It's almost like the BBC turning around and going, this show is getting far too complex. This is getting far too Moffat. It's getting far too... We need to bring new audiences in. We need to go back. We need to kind of soft reboot this. Get rid of the Time War. Yeah, we'll need to mention it. We'll need to have some connections to it for the people who've been following it. But we want to start for a fresh base, a new set of fans. And again, that kind of works with against the whole hype concepts of the Time War.
And I don't imagine, like, you know, the Time War would have to be dark. It would have to be crazy. It would have to be completely, like, mixed up and so on. And then you're coming here, and like we said, we're bringing it back down to just, like, regular life that everybody can relate to. But now you've also got this scene with Mickey, which... I can't imagine a scene like this would be in a Time War series. I don't think they would stop to take like silly moments like this, especially when they're trying to, especially, you know, if you try and put it in relation with some of the other shows that we talked about, you know, Farscape for so on, you know, that series just kept getting worse and worse and worse for John Crichton. And while they did find a way to add humor into it and so on, you know, his life was getting more and more tragic kind of thing. And I imagine that's what they would have done with the John Hurt Doctor. And then now to come here, this would be like, I don't know, this would almost be like John Nathan Turner taking over the show, you know, or even, or more so, more accurately, when Douglas Adams.
I was going to say, yeah, Douglas Adams, perhaps a little more lowbrow some of this than Douglas Adams would do, but, you know, the both keep in,
A little bit more left field comedy than you know, just like, I don't know, something that's a little bit lighter, you know. It's very strange. But then everything in this episode, we haven't really seen anything yet outside of mannequins, and now like an odd bin acting oddly that is not truly just normal Earth. Sure, he gets in a police box, but that's really all that happened. Like that, nothing's been truly too sci-fi yet. You know, it's just kind of weird right now.
And I think also kind of weird if you come back off a Time War. And if we take Day of the Doctor, the TARDIS was quite a big thing in the Time War as well. And so far in this episode, apart from two shots, it's just not been in it. It's, you know, it's really been taken out of the picture.
Yeah.
And again, to focus on these characters. And it's something I must admit, I think why Russell T. Davies would be perfect in this sort of situation is that he is such a brilliant character writer. Regardless of whether people like his stories or whether they feel he doesn't understand sci-fi or whatever the various things were hurled at him, his way of writing people is just so good. Especially, I think, in this sort of situation, which is kind of hard, where you're trying to introduce a certain tone to the show, to a show which has existed for you know, 30 years, 35 years, it's kind of a difficult thing to do. And I think he does it brilliantly, especially over the next few episodes with Rose. Very small things like when in The Quiet Undead, where she steps out of the TARDIS and it focuses on her stepping onto the snow.
Yeah.
You know, that being a moment for a person who's, you know, what would it be like to do that for the first time? You know, the realizations in the end of the world about, you know, she doesn't know this guy. Who the hell is it? She just got into his box and where the hell, you know, there's loads of things going on here, which is, you know, such deft writing. It's really smart stuff, which again would be about why you would hire him, because you'd want to bring this back to being a character family drama away from high concepts, away from and back into sort of, you know, as you say, the perception of this young girl being drawn into a crazy world.
And that makes a lot of sense too, because what you get is a hint in you know Day of the Doctor that he cut himself off. You know,
yeah.
he was fighting. He was basically fighting a war on his own. You know, he didn't want to be called the Doctor anymore. He traveled in the TARDIS just by himself, and he dealt with situations by himself. And therefore, there wouldn't have been a family element. You probably likely wouldn't. I mean, who's to say? But you wouldn't have really like even seen his family, maybe even Susan or anybody like that, realistically. You know, it just would have been him. And so boxed off, just stuck fighting Daleks and whatever other kind of threats decided to join the Time War. And then now you're bringing things back into let's see the Doctor. It's almost like literally what they tried to do by emulating kind of Pertwee's first season by making things come back to Earth, you know, for budgetary reasons. But realistically, what they did was give the Doctor a family in that time. And we're doing the same thing again right here.
Yeah.
After a time of really kind of being all over the place. But in a time where he would have been more so all over the place by himself in places and situations that we just, you know, nerds like us would sit there and be like, this is freaking amazing. I love all this like sci-fi stuff that they're throwing at us and so on. But the average Joe would want what we've got going on right here, like things that they can relate to in their real life. And even a little bit of fantasy to take them away from their real life a little bit, but still leaving them relating to this character, to Rose, which I think they did so well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we've got two things here we could be talking about. One, I'd like to just pick up on the ideas you were saying about him not traveling with people. And you get the feeling in this story, almost that follow on from the War Doctor, where he doesn't really try and bring her along. I mean, you can almost feel like he wants to. But he never invites her, he never shows her the TARDIS, he tries to keep her away, but he just can't help it. He starts to fall back into his old habits. And I'm sure there'd have been other ways to let her escape rather than bring her into the TARDIS, but in the end, he kind of wants that. There's a part from which wants her there. And then obviously we've got the TARDIS itself, which again, we have that big opening shot. And we have the camera, we have the nice high camera, don't we? Showing this big new set, which again would be very different, but almost similar to the previous set.
Yeah. And it is interesting too, because like you said, he could have let her run away, but he brought her in. And it's kind of like exactly what we were talking about before, where there's a part of him that knows he didn't do this horrible thing and he wants to move on and enjoy life again. And there's another part of him that just believes that he did this. And that part of him that wants to move on, you know, like this whole PTSD situation, like is fighting him from not letting him do it. But here he's trying to let her in slowly. And what's great about it is that, you know, we often talk about this show and that Rose is the relatable element, that we're supposed to relate to her as the human being on this planet and get her lifestyle and see this character and the situation through her eyes. But very realistically, we're also relating to the Doctor here because he's going through something and he needs help. And I think he's equally relatable here, even though he's an alien from another world and bringing us into this new aspect. Like, we can clearly see that he's going through something and who, you know, he takes a chance on Rose. He asks her to go with him eventually in the end and gets the rejection. And like, he's put in truly relatable situations that we've all been there. And it's weird until like kind of watching it through these new eyes. I hadn't really thought about that before. I've always just pictured Rose as the relatable person in this episode.
Mm. So what do you think it says about the Doctor? I mean, this was an interesting choice in terms of Moffat's choice here, but we've obviously got a very similar jacket. Now, we know it's not the same jacket, and we could argue whether it's meant to be the same one or whether it's had a slight augmentation, a la William Hartnell to Troughton, or whether he's just picked it up. Or is this something about, we always sort of say how he doesn't acknowledge the War Doctor as a doctor, but it's almost as if in this persona, he still hasn't been able to totally acknowledge himself as the Doctor still. And he's kind of still wearing the same sort of feel or the same sort of dress down as if he's not allowed to be who he once was.
Well, it's interesting coming from the War Doctor to Eccleston, because in a sense, it's almost like he's taking off some of the armor that he's put up during the war. You know, we were meant, you know, as Russell put it for this series, you know, ignoring that obviously the War Doctor was not really a thing. This leather jacket was chosen to represent a thick skin because he didn't want to let anybody in. But if you bring it with the War Doctor actually coming before this, with Day of the Doctor being the actual previous story, the War Doctor is set up even more so to not let people in. He travels, he's got a bandolier on. You know, he's that leather jacket isn't just a thick skin. He's putting on a presence, a visual that is kind of telling people to stand off. Like, I'm not here living my daily life. I'm in war. You know, and when he regenerates, he's still got that guilt. He's still got that I don't want to let anybody in kind of aspect, but he's starting to break down the walls. He's removing the war aspects and is now just trying to make himself look a little bit tough, leave me alone kind of thing. So it kind of still really works to me, especially when we know what comes of the Doctor after him and how that barrier gets broken down even further.
Well, that's it. I mean, I always wonder whether this Doctor is one who, while he sees himself as the Doctor again, has he still not earned quite that feeling that he deserves to be the Doctor again?
Yeah.
Because it's not until he sort of gets that final line he has in Parting the Ways, that, you know, you were fantastic, but so was I, is almost an acknowledgement of, you know, that he has value, which then obviously Tennant goes back to being a little more of that Doctor beforehand, Doctor before the war. Still
you
carrying the guilt, but...
What's so amazing about actually what you just said there, it really made me think about the War Doctor. Like, you know, we know now the reasoning why he actually doesn't go by the Doctor in the Time War, and it's because it was Moff's way of making math work, essentially. But if you put it into a real-world scenario, during the war, he didn't believe that his actions warranted him being called this name that is a healer, that was a good man. He didn't see himself as a good man. Coming off of the Time War, coming out of Day of the Doctor, walking away believing that you destroyed your entire race, like you said, all those children and so on, how can you sit there after having actually pulled that trigger and still think now that you're worthy of the name? It's almost like he realizes, okay, everything's over. I've done what I've done. This war is over. I need to move on. Maybe I can become who I was, and is kind of reluctantly calling himself the Doctor rather than just like kind of jumping in, you know, all hands, almost not reluctantly, maybe more so like he's trying to convince himself that he is worthy. And like you said, it isn't until the very end that he truly believes it.
I mean, maybe that's what the clown, with this perception, this interpretation, that's what the clownish elements of him is. Like here, where he sort of says, why don't you shunt off? He's not playing to Rose there. It's almost as if he's trying again to be the person he was, but isn't.
Yeah, and these are the old days. This is the man I'm back, you know, like the weight is off my shoulders, but trying to convince himself.
Exactly, trying to convince himself. Yeah, he's not really there. This person who's like here, where he's sort of like, you know, I couldn't do anything. I tried, you know, it wasn't my fault. You know, there's so many of these things are suddenly bubbling up. And that sort of becomes very pertinent if you knew previously all the things that was going on in the previous season. This scene speaks to the Time War, which it wouldn't have really done previously because we wouldn't even know it was a Time War at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and how the guilt of it is immediately acknowledged here. And maybe if you're watching this after John Hurt, you would need that. You need it because at this point you'd be like, well, what's about everything else? Is he totally... What has he forgotten everything? Does he not care anymore? And here's our moment where he's like, yeah, I do. And again, it also speaks to how he talks to... there's this running trend, this running thing in this episode about whether Mickey's dead or not. And he hasn't thought about it.
Right.
And you wonder, could that again be reinterpreted if we think of this from the back of the War Doctor, where lives have become a little less material? They've become a little more... You're used to people just...
Yeah, death is a constant.
You don't think about it. So when he sort of says, that hadn't occurred to me, is that because he's had hundreds of years of having it where it no longer occurs to him? And it's sort of kind of, and again, this brings back to the sort of criticism of this era. One of the things which certainly in he says, for I think for the first time in Aliens of London or World War III, he says, I'm sorry, when he finds the dead body of someone he doesn't know the name of, the advisor. And he says, I'm sorry. And there's that sort of line of him sort of trying to almost like reconnect with what death means. Where in the Time War, death wasn't death, you know, Master being Rassilon being an example, you know, people came back to life, you know, death was a meaningless state. Things could be reversed. So suddenly things are now again back to being fixed.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, even even with the Pig Guard in Aliens of London in World War III, you know, it's again kind of shedding habits. You know, there were hundreds of years, as you said, where death was inevitable. Maybe you were just trying to lessen the numbers of the deaths and dwelling on each individual. You just didn't have time for. And now, I mean, certainly when you're in a time war, when you're in, you know, the war with the Daleks, I don't imagine that the doctor had time to sit down and have a cup of tea and read a book like we're used to in the TV movie, you know. Now he's actually got time to sit and think and dwell, and that slowly becomes apparent to him.
So what we're also seeing here, and again, if we do more of these, we'll probably talk about more, but is the all this season is almost like something like the Time War will have consequences. And what Tom's on here is a consequence of the Time War. The Gelf in Unquiet, the Quiet Undead, is a consequence. Certainly parting of the ways, arguably, maybe, to some degree. Or not a consequence, certainly, a final confrontation. So I kind of like that. Again, if we were watching this on the back of Day of the Doctor, you're also looking at consequences. That, you know, the Time War still has impact, even if it's now finished. How has that changed the universe?
Imagine if every episode this season did have some kind of impact from the Time War. If Chris Eccleston's Doctor really just couldn't escape the Time War because everything was somehow, you know, just a leftover, a remnant of it that he's still cleaning up. That would have been an interesting angle. I mean, I know where Russell was mainly and ultimately heading with it and trying to do it, like maybe not necessarily so heavy every episode. But imagine if the Slovene even came to Earth because they're like, well, the Time War's over. This is game again.
I mean, it is often mentioned as well, isn't it? I mean, Jack mentions it in Parting of the Ways. The contestant in Parting of the Ways just says the Daleks are a myth. We have, as you say, we have the Gelf. We have the Autons. We have Dalek as well, obviously. So we have moments where it is kind of sort of made clear that this is still a thing that people are, this has happened, we're moving on, but there are still consequences to it. Maybe that's again the whole thing here is that would be Russell T. Davis acknowledging that the Time War is something that he needs to move on from because that's the edict to reboot to make this a family friendly show. But
so winding down from the Time War rather than building it up as something.
Yes, so it's now been wound down and acknowledged, but not. It's, you say, it's not been built up, it's been done, and we're moving on gradually into new pastures. Which, of course, as we see, the show never can quite do, because it goes back to it. Even to a point where, in the most laziest thing that you could imagine, come the 50th, they just repeat the final episode of 2004. I mean, you'd think they'd do something big at that time, but no. Day of the Doctor again, that's what we had that in 2004, why do we have it again?
You're so right. I never picked up on that before, but that's exactly what they did.
It's terrible. It was such a cheap move.
That's totally, yeah, gosh, we should write the BBC about that one.
So,
and also there's two other guys, still haven't seen them yet. Where are they at?
Oh yeah, absolutely, you wouldn't get to see them for a while as well. Not that long, actually, for Tennant. I mean, again, maybe we'd leave that for another podcast, but, you know, Tennant's introduction becomes interesting too. So we're at the back end of the episode now. So, we, as you say, a lot of callbacks to Pertwee's first season. We've introduced the characters, we've introduced the world. We've kind of established who Rose is against who Bad Wolf is. We don't have any Bad Wolf references in this episode, do we? It's not till next episode.
No, I think they start in the next one. But is kind of a shame. Well, it was an afterthought, of course, in reality. But it would make more sense leading on from Day of the Doctor to have had something in here somewhere. Actually, maybe not. Maybe it would have been like, you know, getting us going, oh, this is weird. We just saw this Bad Wolf girl. Now this is Rose Tyler. What's going on? And then the next episode Actually, yeah, I think it still quite works exactly as it should, the way it did.
Is there anything in End of the World? Is there a Bad Wolf reference?
Yes, there is. Doesn't what's his name says it? It's a Bad Wolf scenario. Mox Balhoon says it.
Right, okay, yeah. And then obviously in Quiet Undead, we've got she sees the Bad Wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think every episode has
Yeah.
one except for this, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, because Aliens of London, we've got it on the side of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
We've got Dalek.
Although,
Yeah.
do two-parters share one? I don't remember that, if it, like two-parters had individuals.
Yeah, I think they're most of them. I'm not sure. Was the one in Empty Child?
Well, the Doctor Dances one was way more subtle, but the Empty Child, man, that's yeah, it's so weird. I used to like have this knowledge off the top of my head before.
Well, yeah. Well, anyway, so we've got this final moment. As I say, a lot of people have argued that certainly at this point, the Doctor could have had several adventures where he went to the Titanic and the various things we saw, and then decides, or realizes that maybe she would want to come along. It's a bit of a, I don't know. I'm never quite sure if I like that myself. I kind of feel that the beat of that is that he goes and then makes a second attempt. But
Yeah, I think anything could have happened for sure, but I think I kind of like it a little bit better that he just disappears and then comes right back, kind of like, you know what? Like literally just goes, you know what? I didn't mention this thing.
mean, you've
Because in a
got,
way it kind of seems more fun that he would have been on the Titanic with Rose and that
yeah,
maybe she
exactly.
like all these adventures she saw are things yet to come in her life, but she's just not in the material that Clive had.
That's how I would see it. I always
Yeah.
get the impression that works the best because there are gaps within this show, in the season, where you could have that many gaps, especially near the back end, where he suggested there are several episodes that we don't see. With in Boomtown, there's a sort of reference there, isn't there, of various adventures that they've had with Captain Jack, and so a couple of them were written, weren't they? A couple of them were novelised. So. Okay, so that is Rose as the opening to this brand new series, this new tone, this new feeling, maybe a shock disappointment to audiences who are kind of expecting either David Tennant or Matt Smith to appear as the new Doctor. Because you don't really quite see Eccleston perfectly at the end of Day of the Doctor. You'd have to pause, well, you'd have had to have paused your DVD or your TiVo, as it would have been at the time. But yeah, I mean, I suppose the argument would have been that Eccleston would have been in there, and that's why you get that final quick glimpse of him. But yeah, so no, it's an interesting position to take this series. So we'll see where we go from here. We may carry on and do some more of these. We may select a few. We might do an overview. Day of the Doctor might be interesting. I don't know. But I think this is certainly it's a really good way to if you want to find a way of getting back into this sort of material. Having seen it so many times, and for us, having talked about it for so many years, it's kind of an interesting way to try and attack it and see what you can find in there, and to almost like re-alter its origins and take it from a different tangent. What would this? What is this about? What could this
Yeah.
have been about? What could this have been a response to?
Well, it's like that feeling of anytime you meet a new fan and you get to talk about the show and you get to kind of experience it through their eyes for the first time, or you introduce the show to somebody new and you get to see them kind of figure out the things, that you had to figure out or see the things that interest them, and that's always fun. You and I have talked many times on podcasts when you watch a particular episode, how, if we've watched it multiple times over, how we're still seeing new things to see. And it's this is an interesting concept that you presented here by imagining the world that there was an actual series for John Hurt prior to this one. And it really did make watching that episode very unique this time around, because thinking about all those angles that would relate to what the Doctor's life truly would have been, rather than what we were just kind of each episode we were building, trying to figure out what his life was like before. And now we kind of have a real idea. And to watch it again really, really did put in a whole new perspective, really did make that very interesting.
And the joke is that even though it is a hypothetical, you know, we're obviously creating a lot of ideas to support this, it is actually technically canon. This is the canon. You know, Day of the Doctor does lead into this. That is how time is now in Doctor Universe. It's John Hurt does regenerate into this Christopher Eccleston, who then has this story. So in a weird way, while it's an odd sort of hypothetical way to look at this story as a terms of production, in terms of continuity, this is what we should really be doing, because this is where those connections are. Those are the connection points. And I think it's just really interesting then to just try and imagine seeing that in that order, what it would be like. What would the time law, what would Outpost Gallifrey have been saying? It wouldn't have been bothered about the square windows, because it would have had that argument 3 years prior with the John Hurt prop. There'd be, so what would be the concern? What would have been the issue? Would it have been the tone? We didn't, shockingly, and I'm disappointed in you, Terra Nova, not one mention of the screwdriver, really, and the change in that.
I'm sorry, I failed you. I failed you. You know, I actually, when he hit the scene there, and he used it on the elevator, I was going to say something about it, but it didn't even occur to me to say something in the fact that it was different than the Day of the Doctor. It was just kind of like, you would have to know it's him because he's using the sonic screwdriver. But you're right. You know, like that's true. That all of those things would be new design elements.
But interesting enough, that wouldn't be a new design element. That had been designed for Day of the Doctor.
Well, yeah, good point, actually. Interesting.
Well, made a little better than a toy, but, you know, it would have been rebuilt to sort of either... Well, some people would have probably said, oh, God, how lazy is that? They've just gone and used one of the future Doctor's sonics for the next one. Or maybe someone said, well, this is exciting. Is this like a precursor to getting to that Doctor? Does that mean David Tennant's going to be the first one out of the two? Well, I think they do actually make it clear in Day of the Doctor, the succession. But... It kind of sort of points to that, doesn't it? It points to that being the destiny, the movement forward. That sooner than later, David Tennant's going to come along because that's his screwdriver from Day of the Doctor. So again, some really just fun ways of looking at these. And I'd really recommend watching Series 1 again in this, not just in this sort of light, but I think time has served it well, to be honest. The only thing I found actually really hard was Season 1, my only gripe, sadly, was Murray Gold's music, which, while I love a lot of his standalone tracks, the actual tone of the incidental music through it's very light. And some of it's just a little too light, a little too tinny occasionally for me.
I think, too, is, you know, one of the issues that we have had for a while with his music, which... I like his music. I don't think I have issues with it on a whole, but it did overpower dialogue quite a bit. You know, but that wasn't his fault. That was the sound mixing.
But then some of it, to be honest, sounds very much, really listening to it now, seems to link more to the sort of 80s style than it does to contemporary music. It feels like he was perhaps reaching and listening to a bit of that. And also, I think, to lighten some of the dark themes. And one of the things maybe we will talk about if we do any more of this, or if we even just look at Season 1 as an overview, is actually how dark this season is. And rewatching it, you know, a few years older, and just seeing just what a dark series this is in terms of a parent, in terms of, you know, looking at it from the perspective of Jackie. You know, there's some really hard moments in this, and, you know, for a parent... I don't know. There's a lot going on here, which is pretty hard. And maybe that would be something we'd talk about in future ones as well. But yeah, it's a really good episode. If you didn't watch it with the commentary, go and rewatch it. If you're in the UK, they're finishing on Netflix by the end of this month. If this goes out before then, there's my warning. If it goes then after then, consider yourself after warned. It's a good season. Really impressed rewatching it. Really impressed indeed. Okay, so I think that's it from us, isn't it, really? Unless you've got any final thoughts that you want to drop in there.
You know, the only last thing I have is not even pertaining to the theme that we put onto it. It's just watching that episode again after all this time. It's interesting that this era now, this season feels every bit as classic as watching like a Tom Baker episode now.
Yeah. Because you can feel its tone. You can feel the signature of its showrunner in the same way that a Bidmead or Williams or a Nathan Turner, you know, you can feel the signature of those showrunners to a degree, and you can feel the era that you're embarking in very distinctly, which is quite exciting and fascinating to watch, and again how it sort of changes the show too, and moves the show forward, which I kind of feel, and I know we've said this many times before, the show's found it very hard since then to do that again in a way which is as dynamic and as different and as situated in television as it is at the time. Because it still feels like, even though I still feel Chibnall's tried, especially with the season 11, to change it, it still feels very much like it's following the format of Russell T. Davis, and it still hasn't felt like it's managed to escape this format, which is a shame.
Yeah, it's difficult for me because, you know, every era of the show, every time there's a new showrunner or a new doctor or something, the show takes on a different tone and so on. But it is kind of weird how some of it just feels classic. And, you know, I want to say right without making that sound egotistical or anything like that. It just feels right. It feels like Doctor Who as I know it. And some of it just doesn't feel on. It doesn't feel like the same show somehow. Maybe it's time. Maybe it just needs time and it will feel that way. I don't know. All I know is that sitting here watching this, once upon a time, I remember watching that episode. As a matter of fact, I remember where I was watching that episode for the first time and remembering like, wow, this is amazing. Look how good this show can look if you can throw some money at it, you know, if you can bring it into the world of today and so on. But watching it, I don't have that same feeling. Instead, it just brings me the same kind of joy and feeling that I have when I watch Tom Baker or Patrick Troughton. You know, it feels very much it's just an extension of the show that I grew up with, rather than sitting there for that first time in 2005 going, oh my God, this is so new. It's so different. He's wearing a leather jacket. You know what I mean? Like, it's so weird that time and just getting used to something. Can do.
Absolutely. And also going in at that time, I remember the time we weren't entirely sure whether this was, while it was clearly set out that it wasn't a reboot, I remember in End of the World where she has a readout and it shows the different strands, the doctor sort of his DNA, which confirms erroneously, obviously now we now know because he's missed the War Doctor, how many regenerations he'd had. So, and obviously erroneously now since last season with Timeless Child. But the idea being that we weren't even sure how much was fixed in continuity. And it's not until you get to, if I recall rightly, we don't get till I can't even remember its name. It's not until 2009 we actually get a shot of all the doctors on the screen, you know, where we have the next doctor, where it goes through and we see.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a long time before we get to that point where there's that real visual acknowledgement of, because there were some people going, well, Paul McGann probably never happened because the BBC never seems to acknowledge that show, that film. So maybe it never happened. Maybe that was ignored. So, you know, there's loads of things like that at the time we didn't know, while watching this now with everything we do know, which goes even beyond that time, which we can then apply to watching this, is, as I said, a fascinating experience.
You know, it does go a long way, though, to say why Clive couldn't find any pictures of the War Doctor, because even the Daleks' own data info cells didn't have the War Doctor. And they fought him. Weird.
Right. So on that, we will talk to you again soon. I hope you enjoyed it. I don't know when this will go up. So I hope you have a good Christmas, whether it's the Christmas we're just about to have or whether it's next Christmas in 2021. I hope that future Christmas, whichever it is good to you. So from me and Brian, good night.